I feel I've been a recipient of many prayers, talking about prayer groups, over the last 13 years of being various places in the world for the Lord. And I just appreciate knowing that people have been praying for our family and for us. And it's meant a great deal. There have been times when we received letters. People would say, praying for you daily. Several people have written like that. And of course, we know of others who've been praying on a regular basis. And it absolutely hits home, and it just encourages your heart when you're a missionary out there. Because sometimes the going is tough, and sometimes Satan is really at work. And gives you a double dose of something when you're just a little bit new to a situation. So I just want to thank all of you who have prayed for our family, and to encourage you to pray for missionaries you do know. And your children will love to pray for them too, especially if they have pictures of the children. They'll love to pray for them. Let me just tell you about our family. Marvin and I now have been married 15 years, and we have three children. Michelle is now 11, and Michael is 6 and a half, and Melody is now 5. So this is the first year that Melody, they're all in school, since Melody's in school, and this is a new feeling. And I feel like this is the year that God has said, just peace to me, and be still, and to be quiet. And I feel that in my innermost being, this is what I need. So just to tell you what we will be doing in the future, we were actually intending to go to Nairobi by now, to move there from Ghana, to change our regional headquarters to Nairobi. But the Lord directed through George and through circumstances to invite us to help him in the job of International Ministries Director. And through circumstances, through God's leading in our family, and the feeling of a need of permanency for a few years, we felt that this was God's plan to come here for this time. How many years this will be, we don't know. But we feel it is permanent enough to probably accomplish the needs that we feel we have. And the exciting part, of course, is that Marvin is still involved, or we both are, in the missionary emphasis of helping missionaries in whatever way we can and praying for them. And reading that song made me a bit homesick. I thought, oh, I'm not a missionary anymore. But really, I feel in heart I am, because there are so many ways we can be missionaries here. Prayer and giving, encouragement, letter writing in these ways. And keeping in touch and welcoming the missionaries when they come. This can meet such tremendous emotional needs that a missionary has when they come back, of wondering to know how do they fit in, where do they, fit into this really complex society that we have here. And they've been gone for so many years. So that's just a little bit about the family and that kind of thing. First of all, I really enjoy just sharing what the Lord has done for us in our family and for us personally and in the ministry. But secondly, I enjoy getting dressed up like this. This is a Ghanaian dress, and this particular stitching is all hand done, manually done on a machine, and it is called jetamy. And they do this intricately all over various places on the dress. And they have because Ghana is so close to Europe, they have traded the patterns back and forth. And of course, Ghanaians, they sew without patterns. They look at something, aha, I can do it. And they do it. And so this was sewn in Ghana, and this is a European style with the Ghanaian wax print fabric. And it's all cotton. And I really enjoy dressing up like the Ghanaians do. They wear all their jewels. They have a lot of Ghana gold, which is 100% gold, and it's very yellow, you know. And so they wear all their gold on it. So beautiful on their black bodies and their vibrant prints. This is not as colorful as some, but I like this particular color. But some of their fabrics on their black bodies is just absolutely dramatically beautiful. And I always wondered, why couldn't I keep my hair in place like they do? You know, it's always, the wind blows and it's always beautiful. I'll stand out there and drip, drip, you know. But they just look gorgeous. And so this is an opportunity to wear some of their things. Now, if I was a true Ghanaian, I would greet you by saying, Wahutasane. And of course, you would say, that means, you know, how are you? Wahutasin. And you would say, Mahoya. And that's our greeting together. And the men when they greet each other, they have special handshakes, and they click fingers when they shake hands. And you have to, with each other's hands, so you have to do it simultaneously. And so it is quite a trick. And I remember Marvin practicing, you know, getting that finger out there just right. And I didn't have as many opportunities to do that, so I didn't get that little thing quite down as good as he did. Let me just tell you a little bit about Ghana itself. I'll recall back to when we arrived in Accra. How many years ago? Well, it's too many years ago right now. But when we arrived in the airport, just some of the feelings I had in arriving. You get off the airplane, and right away the airport, of course, is not air-conditioned, and it's just like a huge blanket coming on you of this humidity. You just feel like it's coming, you know, weighing you down, and it's just like a load of heaviness. And so there's the humidity that first probably strikes you. And then the sun, you're very close to the equator. And so the sun, when you stand out, is very intense, and you can almost feel a burning sensation. It's a new sensation. It's not, of course, an extreme burn, but it's a feeling of, oh, I better get out of the sun. It's very strong. Also, the mosquitoes will be attacking you on your first day, and you'll be thankful that you would have your malaria pills that you are taking and hoping that they will protect you adequately. Other things would be the sights. You know, you walk down a street and you see a beautiful building, and right next to it, a little shack. And across the street, you'd see open sewers, and so you would have all kinds of sights and smells and hear different sounds. Everything would be so different. It's almost as though you had stepped back into Bible times in some respects. And yet there's just the sprinkling enough of the Western way that you know that you are in the world today as it is. And you would hear all the different sounds of the languages, all the different languages that are spoken. Of course, in the city, people, it's not really a village, and it didn't grow up as such, but it's drawn the people from all kinds of villages and all kinds of language backgrounds to sharing and speaking. And you'll hear the drums beating at various funeral ceremonies, which are on Saturdays, where they are trying to make the spirits favorable to the death of a loved one. And you would hear just the music on the radio that they love to play loudly and enjoy, or the dancing or the smiles that you see on the people's faces. In fact, the first year we were there, I was just amazed. I would look at the young children, no shoes and not enough food, and the older people, and they were just smiling. Just so, such a beautiful smile. It's a smile from deep within. It's not just a smile, as we would say. It's a deep joy that chuckles out in laughter. And I thought, they don't even know the Lord, most of these people, I'm sure. And they have this innermost joy. And so I thought, that was a challenge to me as a Christian. I said, Lord, I do not have this joy right here. And so I asked the Lord about that. And I never did get an answer, however. But I did learn a few secrets of learning how they are put together in such a way of accepting things, accepting the way things are as being an act of God. They are very God-fearing, so they attribute so much to God. This is God's way. And they have a symbol in their culture that is called the jinyami, which is this symbol. I don't think you could probably see it from here, but it's a particular symbol in their language and in their culture that says, except for God, or we would say, except for the grace of God. In other words, if God isn't in it, they are doomed. There is no recourse but for God, because they are so much at the end of their tether in themselves that they know it. Their economy has been very poor for so many years. Their government has been in chaos, changing government after government after government. And there's been so much corruption in the foreign exchange that they just literally have no money to exchange for other goods. And of course, they're not an industrial country at all. And they have to buy what they need with their foreign exchange, and they do not have that. They have very little of it because of the corruption of the people in charge. Well, all this gives you a little bit of an idea of how it is when you first arrive. I have really grown to enjoy many customs of Ghana, and it has become a place very dear to my heart as well as a people. But there was a time when I did not feel that way, and that was in our first year, or maybe the first 9 months. And it was very difficult. I must say that it was a struggling experience. It was a time when I felt I'd lost the Christian joy. I had lost hope and faith in why I was to be there. And there are, of course, many reasons for that. And as I look back now and have studied just a little bit more about cultural adjustment, I realize that it is a process. And what I was expecting from myself is to spiritualize it all and then just, you know, a month or so, I'd be on top of it. But instead of that, some of the circumstances were on top of me. And I realized that the heat was continuous most of the year round. And that sort of got you down. I was 4 months pregnant with Michael at that time, coming straight from Kenya after having been in Kenya for a year. And, of course, my daughter as well. I came with my daughter and Marvin, and I was pregnant 4 months. And that made me a bit tired. And, of course, trying to find my way around and the mosquitoes. And then I did have a few infections. And, well, these things just wore me down a bit. And then I can't say that the first few weeks were like that, because the first few weeks were filled with adventure and excitement of this new land and this new country and these very hospitable people and very welcoming, and they loved Americans, which is not always true around the world. And so I thought, this is great. But after I was into the swing of it and trying to find a house, which was very difficult, and all these other things happened, I found that it started wearing on me, and I'd pray about it and nothing would help. And I would pray with Sherry Hall, who was there at the time too, and she found some of the things burdensome as well. And we just kept praying about it and assuming that in time prayers would be answered. But as time went on, we still found it difficult to find the house. And I was thinking, you know how you feel when you're about to have a baby, thinking, I want to get my nest ready. And I thought, where is this nest, Lord? And we'd be going from guest house to guest house trying to stay somewhere, you know, and we'd put Michelle in the car and all the little small goodies in the car and me in the car. The car was filled. Well, every time, I'd say about on the average of every 5 days, we had to move. Well, that plus finding food plus seeing doctor and what have you just really consumed our time. And there were no houses in the, I think there were a number of three houses in the paper to look for, and the minute you'd phone, they were gone. That was how scarce it was at that time, and very expensive as well. So we thought, oh, you know. So then my faith started dwindling, and I'd pray, and then I'd get pretty positive and feel like perhaps this was it. You know, we're going to get a house just in time. Well, fortunately, to make a long story short, the Lord did get us in contact with someone who had a home available even before it got on the market, and that's the way you had to do it. And we were able to get the house before it was even in the paper. And I was so thankful for that house. I said, oh, Marvin, it's the one, isn't it? It's the one. And he said, well, just remember now, the kitchen is very small. He's very thoughtful of me. And I said, oh, I don't care about that. It's home. I didn't see anything better than that one. And I thought, and he said, well, just remember, you know, the kitchen is small, and this is where you'll spend time. And how do you really feel about it? And I said, well, I think I can make it do. You know, we can put curtains and make it look better and all this stuff. And we took it, and we were very happy there. And we lived there the whole time we were in Ghana, and I was really happy. Of course, it's nothing like the kitchen I have now, but it was adequate and for our needs. And we moved in and bustled as quickly as we could to get the house settled. You know, we had to accumulate furniture and put everything in its place and unpack our shipping, which had come, and all that, and make it home. And then we did all that within a week of the baby coming. I was very grateful about that. And I felt, now I can, 1 week of grace, and then, you know. And another thing I was so thankful for was that we did get in contact with a good Ghanaian gynecologist. He had been trained in Germany and in Europe and had his own clinic, in fact. And it was a very small clinic, and it was a small nursery, and everything seemed controlled and nice. And I thought, well, he's the one that I would like to deliver my baby. And so I went there, you know, during the time of all the checkups, and then his nurse took me around to the various parts of the hospital, showed me around, and I said, this looks very nice. And the room was plain but very adequate and very clean, and the food menu sounded good. And then I looked in the labor room, and I thought, oh. I went in there, and a huge room, and I looked in there, and first thing I saw was the basin and hot and cold water. Then I saw some little oxygen pumps over there. Then I saw a hard bed, you know, for labor and all, and that's okay. And I saw this huge clock that I could be looking at and timing everything. Okay. And then I saw the ceiling fan. Oh, that'll keep me cool. But beyond that, there was really nothing around that I could see that would be of assistance if I needed any. And I just right then, you know, not knowing the hospital well, not knowing what was available in the country beyond that, I just really remember in that room kneeling down in prayer in my heart and saying, Lord, it's just going to be you and me. I can see that now. And but really, with that sort of desperate plea to God, I felt like David, and I called up to him and drew nigh to him, and he did draw nigh to me in that experience. And throughout the whole pregnancy, throughout the delivery, everything went well. There were no complications, and I felt that the trust that I had given to the Lord, he repaid my obedience with blessing. And I did have this one little niggling thought, and I thought, well, Lord, I'll trust you, but just remember now, if you want to change in plans and you want to send me to Europe and have the baby, I'm available. I said, you know, unless I hear otherwise, I'm planning to have the baby here. You know, remember that, Lord. I'm here. And I did remind him a couple times, I must admit, but it was with peace. And I feel that's just God's caring for me and probably many answers to prayer. I'd say that after that experience of having Michael, bringing him home, everything went well, I was, you know, recuperating after that for a few weeks, and then I began to have an infection on my skin that was, at that time I didn't know, but it was a boil, and it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And I thought, well, I've never had one of these. And then I became fearful. I thought, this thing is not heading, you know. And some British lady came over and said, my dear, I had a bandage on it. She was visiting me and the baby. And she says, my dear, that is not just a boil. And she knew all about this. And she said, it's a carbuncle and you must get to the doctor. And she frightened me, you know, a bit. And I thought, maybe I better get to the doctor. I thought, well, it'll go away. And then I became fearful to think that perhaps he'll lance it, and it was so tender, and I thought, if he does that, you know, it'd be so painful. And of course, when you're in a new country, you do not know the system. That's the whole bottom line of this thing that I'm explaining. You don't know it, and you're learning it. Therefore, there's a lot of opportunity for human fear to crowd in to faith, and for Satan to use that as well, for discouragement and for depression. But anyway, I listened to her, but I didn't go to the doctor. And of course, Marvin was encouraging me all the time to go, but he is not one to just demand me to do something. He would just say, honey, you better go. You know, I'm going to make an appointment. And I'd say, I was very strong. I don't want to go to the doctor. And then Dave Hall said, well, you know, I've known of someone who's died from one of those things in the back. In the back of their neck where it's been close to the brain. And I thought, oh, dear, I don't want to die quite yet. And so I'm not quite ready. And so that really got me to the doctor. I wonder if that was a true story. I'm sure it was. But I did go to the doctor, and he gave me a penicillin, actually 2 days worth of penicillin shots, and he didn't lance it, for which I was very grateful. But that cleared everything up, except I learned later that that did not clear out the staph infection that I had in my system. That took care of the immediate infection, but didn't get rid of the staph infection. And so I kept having these boils, sort of little crops of boils, and they would not head and go away as normal. So I went to this, I found out about this American doctor there who was doing research on skin diseases in Ghana. And I thought, well, I better see him. So I did, and make a long story short, he helped me tremendously. He told me what to do, and when the symptoms got to a certain point, go on antibiotics, and what antibiotics to take, and where to get them, and all that. So he was, I think, a real godsend and an answer to prayer for me, and encouraged me greatly to know that I had a recourse, something I could do about it, that perhaps would get on top of it. Of course, all this time I was antibiotics quite continuously, and with trying to take care of Michael and all, I was in and out of the bed, so to speak, for the first 4 months Michael was born, just caring for him and trying to fix the meals and trying to get rested and, you know, keep thinking, I've got to get my resistance up. But then, you know, you think I have to get more rest. And I was working so hard at this. But really, all the time, beyond the physical part, at the same time, spiritually, I was learning a lot of lessons as I look back now. At that time, it was hard because I was really fighting God, I feel, at that point. I was saying, Lord, why? Why am I here, and for what purpose if I am going to be going through this, these boils, and we can't get on top of the actual antibiotics, never really clear them completely, so they keep coming back. And I lived in a bit of a fear, thinking what's going to happen next and what's really wrong with me, and not having very much energy or appetite and getting thinner and this kind of thing. And I kept asking the Lord why. And anyway, accusing him. And I remember one conversation I had with Marvin when I just loaded it all off. And he said, well, he listened and listened and listened. And then he said, well, it won't be like this forever. You know, this is just today. It'll go away. We'll just pray about it. You know, just don't project it into the future, and we'll just take a day at a time. Well, we did that, and that always sort of gave me, you know, I plucked up my hope and courage and thought, well, I think I can make it through another week, you know. But I really didn't have the joy of each day or the peace, faith, and hope in my being. And I remember one day I just got so tired of asking God questions. Why? What? How come? Why me? All these things that we as women can do when things are going wrong. I decided maybe I should read Job. So I read through Job, and I identified with Job, with the boils and this, and I could understand all that, you know. And then I decided the questioning, there's just no profit in it. And so I decided to stop asking God and to stop start telling him some things. So I started telling him, Lord, you feel so far away. I feel numb to you. I feel like you're not in my experiences in life. I'm not finding the promises. I was just completely honest and truthful with him, verbalizing my heart. And I said, but despite all that, Lord, from now on, I'm not going to ask you any more questions. I'm going to hold on to you in all of life's experiences, whatever it will bring, and ride the storm out until it's finished, because I feel that's my responsibility. If I draw nigh unto you, you will draw nigh unto me. And that I'm sure the Holy Spirit just dropped that into my heart so that I would hang on to the Lord and then ride the storm out. And it was from that point on that I feel progress was made. Circumstances didn't change. Just gradually over a period of a year, they changed, basically. But it wasn't the circumstances that changed. I believe it was my heart that changed toward God in coming to the end of myself and admitting it. Admitting that, okay, it's all right if I'm going to be a failure as a missionary. It doesn't matter because God's in control. If he wants me to be a failure, Lord, I'll be a failure for you. I just came to the absolute end of myself. And I think that that is where God had a real start in a deeper start in my life. There have been other times I've come to the end of myself, but this is a very dramatic time for me, and it's a time I'll never forget, and it's a time of real beginnings for me as a real missionary. And so I feel that by letting go of me, I could hang on to God. I could come to the beginning of himself and his grace and his power and his mercy and his strength. And I think what I was doing is just trying so hard in the flesh, trying to have enough strength, trying to have enough energy, trying to be a good wife, trying to be a good missionary and trying to be on top of my physical circumstances. And I just was trying too hard. So I'm so thankful that God gave me, that he loved me enough to bring it into focus for me so I could see it. As you know, when I was going through that, those 4 months seemed like a long, long time. I look back now, I think it's just a drop in the bucket of my life. And I'm so thankful he loved me enough to bring that to my attention. And then at that time, of course, was when just about May or so, Michael was born in December. I came down to the boils the end of January, and then through about May or so. I didn't realize it, but the intervals between the boils were longer, and the boils I had were less, just fewer in number. So I could see a pattern later on that this was going out of my system. And the doctor had told me, as I gained some of the resistance, like the Ghanaians have the resistance from, you know, when they're little, I was getting all this, just having the baby and all, just as an adult, which is, you know, trying to get used to all these resistances and all this. And so he said it'll just take time in my particular case. And he gave me some helpful hints, too. But it was at that time that Doug Sparks, who was the director of EMMA, and he was our boss, said to us that perhaps we should have a sort of a medical leave for about 3 months. Marvin had to come back for some business for a few weeks anyway for a meeting, and I would be left there. So he thought maybe just bring the whole family back. Of course, I had struggles with that because I thought, well, you know, if I'm really making it, I won't come back. And then I thought, that is silly. I want to do what God wants me to do. And so I prayed about it, and the staff prayed about it, and we felt that I should go. And so I went home, I stayed with Marvin's folks and everybody there, and we had such a good time. And basically, I just had balanced meals and a lot of TLC and just help, you know, just emotional help too, just from Marvin's mother to someone to talk to, a grandmother and all this. And it was just great. And of course, in the back of my mind, I thought to myself, how will it be when I get back on that plane and go back to Ghana, you know? Oh, how will it be? So I prayed about that, and I didn't even tell Marvin about this, but it was the hardest thing for me to get back on that plane to go back. I knew when I left that I was coming back, and deep in my heart I knew God. It was just like a burning feeling. I just knew we'd go back. But when it was time to go back, in my heart I was fearful again. And, of course, I read passages in the passage 2 from Joshua 1 and various things about not being afraid. And I prayed a lot, and I just said, well, Lord, regardless of my emotions, I feel it's your will to go back, and we will go back. So we got on the plane and went back. And I must say that God does bless obedience, and this is one big principle I've learned. God blesses obedience. Now, in what shape or form, we don't always know, but he blesses obedience. And in that particular way he blessed is by changing my heart. When we went back, and we were back just a matter of a week or so, and I remember driving down downtown to try to find some food, and I just had such joy in my heart. I can still remember the feeling. You know, it's just almost a contagious joy. And I thought, Lord, this is great. You know, beautiful day outside. You know, I wasn't even thinking about the heat. Beautiful day outside. And I'm going downtown, and I just have such joy and peace in knowing that I'm in the right place at the right time in your will. And it's just so great to know that. And I said, well, you know, I started investigating, what is the difference? And the difference is a complete abandonment and surrender to God in wanting to do his will, and not only wanting to do it, which I felt I wanted to do, but also looking to him for the power and strength and all that he can fill us with in order to accomplish that. And I think that's where I had to come to the end of myself. And I just feel like at that day, from then on, circumstances in life did not change. They were still unpredictable in Ghana. You know, if it wasn't the boils, then it, which really diminished in a short period of time after that. But there was, you know, power shortage, water shortage. Oh, you know, you can name it. I mean, even today in America, we can name things that could frustrate us. But really, those things do not need to dictate our attitudes. And so I must just give God all the praise and the honor and glory for whatever he has done, because it's so obvious to me when I came to the end of myself and the beginning of God and as a missionary in that experience and how he came in like a flood. I think the truths that are best expressed here for me that were tested were these three. That God is love. You know, it was very easy for Satan to come in and say, oh, if God is love, then why is he allowing this to happen to you? You're a missionary serving him. You know how your thoughts are. Or God is sovereign. I went around with that one too. God is sovereign. And I thought, yes, God is sovereign. But I just felt attacked in that area. Well, if God is sovereign, then he's in control. But is he in control? Because look what's happening. You know, this is out and that out. You can't get food. The refrigerator's broken. You know, what have you. And God's will is good, acceptable, and perfect. That's the truth of the Bible. But that also was tested, because that was the one I remember asking the Lord a lot about. And I said, but God, I can't see that your will is perfect. I can't see it. It's just not here. It's just a composite of adverse circumstances. And but as he gave me, what shall I say, better spiritual vision, I feel that he has allowed me to see these three truths in the light of eternity. The fact that God is love, he's sovereign, and that his will is good, acceptable, and perfect. Through eternal eyes, that was true. He is a God of love. He loved me enough to help me become a deeper person, a better Christian, one who is really relying on him. And I think it's not so much that missionaries, you know, sometimes I hear people speak of missionaries saying, well, that person's a missionary, or that person is, that kind of person is a good missionary. But really, I do believe that a lot of it starts with the matter of the heart, how our attitudes are toward circumstances. And I'm so glad that God has begun a work in my heart in seeing, in having spiritual eyes to see that what appears outwardly is not necessarily so, but it's the truth of the word and what he is doing inwardly. And his will is good, acceptable, and perfect, and he has done a work in my life. And I feel in the life of our family, our relationships, our staff relationships there in Ghana, we were so close. We were family. we were aunts and uncles and cousins, you know, to each other, and we truly felt that way. And of course, adversity brings you together, and that was accomplished. And the benefits of that, and the fact that Ghanaians could look on us as a group, and by faith we trust that they could see the love we had for one another, and the support, and really the dependence we had upon each other, and the dependence on the Lord. There are three aspects of my life in Ghana that have been really developed, and I'll tell you, one particular book I spent a great deal of time in was Philippians. That was the book I lived in, that plus just regular reading, but Philippians, and then back to Psalm 121. And that just, once Psalm 121 just tells about, I'll just read the first part of the verses since time is going, but it says, this is the psalm that the Lord gave me to encourage me to go to Ghana from Kenya. I sort of felt I needed a little impetus from the Lord to say, I'm going to take care of you and help you. And this is the Psalm 121, and I'm sure you're familiar with it. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From whence does my help come? And that's exactly what we need. We need to know that he's going to be our helper. My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. So he's our helper and our keeper. Behold, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper, and the Lord is your shade on your right hand. The sun shall not smite you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. And that was very important to me, because I thought, from Kenya to go to Ghana, I was adjusting to Kenya and things were going fine. But I thought, when I read that, I thought, Lord, you've even promised to help me and keep me and protect me, but you've also promised here that you'll keep my life, you know. That's a special thing, going to a country that's so many things are unpredictable, I guess is the best way of describing it. He would keep my life, such a promise. And I went out in confidence with that. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this day forth and forevermore. So I lived in that psalm, and I lived in Philippians. In Philippians, just these three items here, the three big things I feel I carry around in my heart and that can be principles for everyday living anywhere that we live. First of all, that he is able to turn my fears to faith. And obviously I've shared my fears that I had at that time. And when I looked through Philippians and read Philippians 4:6, where it says, have no anxiety about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. So I saw there that he said, don't be anxious, don't have any fears, but pray about everything. Don't worry about anything, but pray about everything. And I thought, well, that's something I need. And, of course, the key thought is here, turning it all over to the Lord in prayer with thanksgiving. And then this peace, which I described, which the Lord brought into my heart by his mercy, that this peace came in, and it does pass all understanding. You look around and you think, I have no reason to be joyful and, you know, just physically looking around. And I was. And you just know that's when it's God, because you know that all the crutches are taken away. And he did keep my heart in my mind. And I just think of several things that I had fears about, and he turned them to faith. I've already described some of them, but one of the other ones I haven't described were snakes. They were spitting cobras, and we have found them in our yard, in our compound, and all. Of course, I had two little children at that point. I had Michael was born, and then 15 months later, Melody was born. Well, when we went back after the last term, Melody was toddling around. Well, I couldn't leave them to go out in the garden by themselves. And I decided for myself, I didn't want a nanny or a person to take care of my children. I did have a house helper who helped me chop up things and helped clean the house and various things because of the humidity and the drain and strain of living, which was a tremendous help. But I thought, I want to care for my own children. And I felt God was in that. So I would be out there with them all the time when they had their little walks that I was walking to, because they were not old enough. Now, Michelle, who then was older, well, I was able to train her, and she was able to know about the snakes. But we did find two snakes, and we had our house helper go out and kill them. Well, that's a fear that a mother can have. Secondly, thieving. There's a lot of that going around in the countries, these different countries, third world countries. People are so desperate desperate to have food, that they need your things, and they take them when you're gone. Well, the Lord protected on that. Personally, we never had any thieving in our house while we lived there, though it was broken into when we weren't living there and someone else did. But we didn't have any thieving. However, we did have one of our shipments pilfered. Our last shipment to Ghana was pilfered, but nothing valuable was taken. So we're really thankful about that, because we had medicines, we had shoes for the kids, and things like that that were a good investment. And then, of course, there's disease, and I'm sure you've heard of some of our staff in Ghana who've had hepatitis and typhoid. And there are those diseases, and cholera and malaria, that are rampant, really. And you just feel vulnerable. You just feel, you know, you're there, and you feel like it's going to come. And so fear can come in. But right then, when you just turn it all over to the Lord in prayer, in a deep sense of prayer and dependence on Him, He does come through, and He shows a way to escape if you need a certain thing that's not available. Something will be supplied. Oh, I can tell you a number of stories. But anyway, just the fact that I can testify He's turned my fears to faith. And it's been a glorious experience. And I give Him the glory. Secondly, He is able to turn my frustrations to contentment. Well, I'm sure you talk to any missionary, and there just are certain frustrations. Even here, there are frustrations as well. But you'll just know that there are a number just having to do with living on the field. First of all, there's a continual humidity, and just that particular frustration of having to have less energy and living with less strength and being satisfied with that, realizing this is all the energy I have today, and I'll take my afternoon rest and I'll get through the day. We were fortunate enough to have an air conditioner in our bedroom, which helped us to sleep well, and we're thankful for that, and fans as well. But then there were times when the power went out, you know, the lights would go out of an evening, you wouldn't have any lights. And then that could be a frustration, but then, because you're trying to do the dishes and get the kids in the bath by candlelight and all this stuff. But anyway, I just told the Lord, well, I don't want to live a frustrated life, and I can't, just give me some ideas that I can work around this. Well, of course, when you know the lights are going out or they have gone out, you do the best you can to get the kids bathed. And then I just say, well, kids, and they were really fearful without the lights. They were so tiny, they thought, what's going on? And so I said, come on the bed, and I'll read you some stories by candlelight, or tell you some stories if I wasn't bright enough for reading a story. And that was really a fun time. You know, I had all the kids on the bed, and usually that was when Marvin was on a trip, if I remember correctly. I don't remember he was on the bed either. So this did happen a lot when Marvin was gone. But anyway, God is able to change circumstances in our hearts. But I get these in the bed, and I tell them stories, and really it was such a close, fun time. They'd often fall asleep, especially the two little ones on the bed, and I'd just carry them to their beds, and they'd be so peaceful. So I thank God. He's in the business. He's a creative God. He's in the business of giving us ideas when we need them and if we just depend on Him. Then the water would be out. One time it was out for one whole week. And I thought, my, we know the first couple of days I can manage, you know. We had some water stored in the garage and buckets and all this stuff. And then we ran out of that water, and Marvin had to go haul some more water and get that. And so he did that. And then I let my hair go for about 4 days, you know, in that humidity. And I said, oh, I don't think I can stand another day. So I said, Marvin, can I use some water? He said, yeah, go ahead. So I did. But, you know, these are just humorous times. I mean, you get to a point sometimes where if you're really in tune with the Lord, you know, at least into His, with His grace and mercy and just dependent on Him, you can just sort of laugh about some of these things. And that's what we really did as a staff. We just had to have a good laugh sometime. It was just almost humorous. And that particular time, I remember it just seemed like it'd be endless. And somebody said there was a rumor that water was going to be, there was some breakage of some pumps and things, going to be off for a month. Well, mind you know. I thought, oh. And then I thought, well, I'm not going to think about a month. I'm going to think about today. And so try to make my needs met today. And, you know, you could really live a frustrated life and a fearful life as a missionary, even as a Christian anywhere in the world, if you don't take hold of these things and give them to God in prayer and in true dependence, where you know it doesn't depend upon you. And I must say, He had brought me to that place. Thirdly, He's able to replace my grumbling spirit with a thankful and a rejoicing one. And that's Philippians 2:14, where it says, do all things without grumbling or questioning. And I remember underlining that and just thinking, boy, I can see that I can have that tendency. And then it says in Philippians 4:4, of course, rejoice in the Lord always. And again, I say rejoice. Well, I tried to reconcile all these things together and realize it all came down to God. It all came down to depending upon Him. And there are many opportunities, of course, to have a grumbling spirit. You know, there was a scarcity of food. We had to go to Lome, which is the next country, in order to do our shopping, which was about a three-hour drive over potholes, and 3 hours each way. And we'd do it every 6 weeks. And usually Marvin would do the grocery run because I was home with the children and with schooling and pickups and take-twos. There just wasn't any time for me to go. So he'd leave about 4 o'clock in the morning before it got hot, and he would come back about 7 at night with 6 weeks of groceries. So there was a scarcity of food within the country for us, and secondly, there was a lack of variety. There just wasn't a whole lot of variety in our menu. And, you know, one can just... The thing is, you know, you can take a trip and see things and think, oh, that's interesting, that's different, that's new. But when you're a missionary living in it, with it, day in and day out, it's just like anything, you know, a sore toe or whatever, it just begins to wear on you. And it gets you down, and that's why it's so important to live a very vital, close, dependent relationship with the Lord. And I'm thankful that He has brought me to this place. Also, there was a beautiful time at Christmas. We had just gone back the last time, and our shipment, oh, there was a big story there, but anyway, our shipment was going to be delayed. And we were knowing then our Christmas presents were not coming that we were going to give each other and the staff. There was just, it was difficult. You could not even buy Christmas presents for each other in the country. So we had these presents with, but they weren't shipped yet. So what we decided to do, I thought, oh, the little children, you know, they'll miss out. But then I looked in this drum of stuff that I had left over from the previous time we were home that hadn't been used as presents, and they were just a few items in the bottom. And I thought, well, that will do for Michelle, and that will do for Michael, and that will do for Melody, and that will do for Marvin, and just enough. And I said, well, we don't need any more than that. And so I wrapped them, and I tried to do special things at Christmas that time. And sure enough, the kids remember that as one of the, just as good a Christmas as any of the others that we've had on the field. And it was, and I learned then, again in a deeper way, that it's not so much, you know it for yourself, but for your kids, you sort of want to do better for them. And I thought, well, the Lord supplied these things just to have enough things on hand to give them for that Christmas. And they had adequate they needed, and they never asked for any more, and they were just in the spirit at Christmas time, was just as happy. And I thought, isn't that wonderful at times in our lives when the Lord takes the crutches out? Then we can see what our Christianity is really all about. We can really see it sometimes is not so beautiful, but we can really see where we are spiritually, and we can help our children in many ways to see that things do not matter, but people do. And so that was that Christmas. So I just really would like to leave these thoughts with you. Of course, there's one little point here that's a very important key to making all of this work, especially, and I think it starts with our attitudes, what we're thinking about in our mind. We have to make a decision in our mind. Because if we see any circumstance in life, we can see just the negatives and see, oh, look at that, you know, and look at that, and look at that. Pretty soon, we're consumed with negative thoughts. But I feel that any circumstance in life has at least one little positive in there. And I think if we fill our hearts and minds with the positive aspects of life, the positive things in each circumstance, and trust the Lord with the negatives, and commit it to Him, and be dependent on Him for them, that's where change takes place. And it all starts with our mind, and then of course our mind dictates to our emotions, and our attitudes come forth from that. And so often I'm trying to help my children to say, you know, you can choose your attitude. We can choose it, you know, because many times they'll just react or respond, you know, to something, how kids are. And I say, but you know, realize you're a responsible person. You can choose it. And that's what I'm telling myself. And as I prepared this just to share with you, I thought, this is so applicable to my life even today here in America. You know, anything that I'm fearful of, turn it to the Lord in prayer. Anything that I'm frustrated about, that I can expect Him to bring contentment into my life. And that if I have a grumbling spirit, is to start to look at the positives and to thank Him for those things. And often I'll say to my kids, well, let's see the things we can be thankful for and not worry about the things that, you know, we can't be or that we don't have. Many times they'll want more and more things, you know. And in the store or something, I'll say, well, let's be thankful for what we do have, and let's not worry about what we don't have. There's so much to be thankful for. And I must say, having sung this song today and sharing now, that a part of my heart goes back to Ghana because of living there 5+ years, and then before that, 1 year in Kenya, and before that, Australia and New Zealand for 4 years. And it's just been a wonderful experience in life. I wouldn't change it for anything. The pains have been well worth all the blessings. And in my heart, I'll always be a missionary, and I want to be a part of whatever that means here in America, praying, giving, an extension of myself to missionaries. And I just feel that it's the most wonderful thing in my life, and it has changed my life. It has given me dual vision, or like some people say, when you get some missionary, seminary experience, you get trivocalism. Well, I feel like I have bifocalism, at least, that I have just life in America, but I also feel like I have a feeling for what it is to be out there, and I just feel I've left part of my life there, and that in my heart, I think that's the hardest thing I want to share with you, really, in the end, is saying goodbye each time we've left these countries. It's, for me, the way I'm put together, my temperament, the way I am, and I've just come to accept that and realize that's just part of Christ's sufferings in entering into the gospel, is saying goodbye to all my friends. Each time I leave, I make friends, you know, and keep moving around the world. But it has been the hardest part, probably. But recently I had a tremendous blessing. Maureen Goulston from New Zealand has visited here. You may have known her or have met her or heard her name. And I knew her very well in New Zealand, and that has been 11 years ago or plus. And we lived in their home before we had children, and I learned so much of the New Zealand way of life living in their home. And I must say that that was a super blessing to have after all these years to see her again. But, you know, when we get to heaven, we'll be able to see all the people all at one time that we have had contact with, we've helped, or have helped us. I think that's going to be a time of real rejoicing. I look forward to that. Thank you.